This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Get in by Kanev. Stastny first on the puck. Stastny to the front of the net. Scores! Another sharp angle. And Paul Stastny first on the puck. Jams it from a sharp angle past Pekka-Rinne. And the Jets have a 2-0 lead. Wheeler plays it back up top to Buffalo. To Laine. Saros to save. Score! Paul Stastny bangs in a rebound of a Patrick Laine shot. Power play goal, Jets. It's 4-1 Winnipeg.
Paul Stastny with two goals in the deciding Game 7 victory over the Nashville Predators in the Central Division Final. You could also call it the Western Conference Semifinal, I suppose. A great performance by the Jets trade deadline day pickup. Fit in seamlessly with the Jets for their playoff run and for the end of the regular season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Dave, a lot of talk, of course, about Paul Stastny. He certainly fit in very well with the Winnipeg Jets when he was acquired from the St. Louis Blues. From your perspective, before we even get into the dollars and cents sort of reality of the situation, given all the RFAs, significant RFAs, given the pending UFAs for the Winnipeg Jets next season, not so much this year because the UFAs this year are not what I would describe as backbreaking, let's say. I mean, Sean Mathias and Matt Hendricks up front, Toby Enstrom on the back end, Michael Hutchinson on the back end. None of those guys, it would be no surprise if none of those guys came back.
Right, yeah, I agree.
You know, it'd probably be more of a surprise if any of those guys came back, you know. So given the reality of the salary cap situation for the Winnipeg Jets going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee a manner in which the Jets can afford Paul Stastny and get him under the salary cap unless they were to make another accompanying move, trade out a guy who makes more, who makes, you know, $4 million, $5 million a season? Maybe, you know, people talk about Matthew Perreault and Brian Little. They signed relatively new contracts with the Jets, maybe overvalued. I would suggest probably the Brian Little contract right now doesn't look like a fantastic contract with 6 years left on it and a little more than $5.2 million a year. But it would not be the Jets' style to sign a guy and then immediately try and flip that contract. So can you see the Jets getting Paul Stastny under contract or fitting him in to their salary cap structure unless there's an accompanying move with it?
I don't know. It's going to be tough. I mean, look, the reality is he knows that he's earned himself a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he also knows that whatever it is, the contract is most likely going to be somewhat of an albatross eventually, right? Because he's going to want term.
Sure.
I mean, he's going to want term. He's going to want money.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things the Jets really can't afford to give up right now?
Term and money.
Yeah, term and money. So, I mean, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, as much as you like Paul Stastny, as much as you like what Paul Stastny brought to this team,
mm-hmm.
the affordability of Paul Stastny, I think, is not in your range right now. Now, if the Jets are willing to make some moves, make some splashes, you know, send some guys out, yeah, fine. I guess it can be done, of course. But, you know, and again, we talked about it, Drew. I mean, you got Patrick Laine, who's going to sign a big deal. You got Trouba. You got Hellebuck. You got all these guys you want, Morrissey. You got all these guys who you're going to want for long term. Now, don't get me wrong. Ehlers' contract is great. Scheifele's contract, beyond great. Scheifele's contract is going to allow you to, you know.
Yeah, Scheifele's contract, you're stealing money.
Absolutely, there's no question about it. Like, Mark Scheifele's contract is one of those contracts that you're sitting there going, you know, that is such a boon to the organization.
Sure.
To have those extra probably $2, $3 million sitting in your bank as opposed to paying Mark Scheifele. And, you know, again, you've got a number of years for that.
Yeah.
But to me, again, you're not making this move without some sort of corresponding move because, you know, and again, do you want Mark, do you want Brian Little as your third line center making, you know, what
five,
do we say?
Over $5.29 million.
Right. So that's a question. Now, again, I mean, it speaks to your depth and, you know, you're not going to have all these guys healthy throughout the year. So, I mean, again, You know, you have Roslovic, Perreault, Little. It's quite a nice third line. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to complain about that line. So financially, if you can do it. But again, the one thing we can't just, you can't just do dollars and cents because there's so many intangibles that come along with these contracts, like, you know, in terms of bonuses, this and that. So what I'm saying is you have to factor all of these things in
sure.
to whether you're going to have, you know, so it's not just like, okay, how much money is on cap friendly? Let's add it up. You have to factor in other things that go into that, right?
I was thinking about this, you know, in preparation for the show, in preparation for the segment.
That makes one of us.
Oh, there you go. It's that, I mean, you know, there's going to be an expansion draft, another expansion draft coming up.
Correct.
In probably a couple of years' time. And if you have all these guys who will now be veteran players and won't be exempt from being selected in a expansion draft on your books, you're going to lose potentially a very good player. Now, maybe you're okay losing a very good player if they're all of a sudden not performing to the level that their salary is. But that's another factor that, you know, the Jets are going to have to think about as they go forward here in terms of figuring out these RFA players, figuring out players going into next season. A guy like Blake Wheeler is going to get... I think Blake Wheeler gets signed pretty close to July 1st. Mm-hmm. I think this summer you'll see Blake Wheeler sign an extension with this team. It's going to be another, but that's another wrinkle you have to factor into the. I mean, Blake Wheeler at 90 points a year, and right now he's coming off a year of 90 points. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at what a guy like Evander Kane got, and we'll talk about Evander Kane a little bit later on in the show in terms of that contract, it's not exactly apples to apples. But Evander Kane is a winger. Blake Wheeler is a winger. I mean, Blake Wheeler is going to be within his rights to ask for $8+ million a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And sure, you don't necessarily want to pay him that as a guy who's going to be 32 years old when that next contract kicks in. But, you know, the reality of the situation is that's what the market is going to demand for Blake Wheeler.
That's what his agent is going to demand.
Well, that's what his agent's going to demand, and that's what the market's going to demand. Because if he hit free agency, even as a 32-year-old, he would get that kind of contract. The NHL hasn't gone the way of baseball yet, where there's, and I don't know if it's collusion per se, but in baseball, they really don't pay those veteran guys anymore who are on the downside of their career, the big contracts that they used to pay them. And we saw that this offseason in baseball, lots of guys who came off big numbers, but who were on the wrong side of 30, had a lot of trouble getting another contract or getting a significant contract. NHL hasn't worked that way as of yet. So I just don't know how you fit in Paul Stastny your salary structure. And, you know, and my thinking about this, and I think I discussed this with Ezzy on Wednesday's show, is that I don't know if you necessarily need to be that set up the middle right on the beginning of the season. You had a great amount of success this year with Brian Little as your second line center.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you continue to have similar success during the regular season and then the trade deadline hits and your team is solidly in a playoff spot or your team is, you know, has no reason to think they're not a Stanley Cup contender, why don't you then go out and try and acquire another centerman if that's what you deem that you need, or a winger or whatever it might be to shore up your depth, and it doesn't cost you a long-term dollar figure?
Yeah,
that's how I can see the Jets approaching, you know, the Paul Stastny or the center ice depth question going into next year.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right, Drew. And I also think the fact is that you have an opportunity to promote from within.
Sure.
Now, Jack Roslovic, as a guy who's very comfortable playing center, we know defensively he's, you know, I mean, sure, the guy is going to have a hiccup or two, which speaks to my point about guys getting, you know, a guy who plays as well as Jack Roslovic does, you know, you make one mistake and again, it's magnified, right? Which is what we talked about earlier in the show. But, I mean, he's a guy who's very comfortable playing center. Now, did he play a lot on the wing with the Moose? Yes, because the Jets wanted him to be on the wing to mm-hmm. start. Does he have the opportunity maybe to be up the middle next year? Maybe. Maybe you slot him into that third line center. I'm not saying you're for sure going to do that, but I'm just saying that it's a possibility.
I have to think the Jets are going to want Jack Roslovic as a centerman
mm-hmm.
for next season. This is a guy who's played center for the bulk of his career. You drafted him presumably as a centerman, and, you know, assuming he can make the transition, well, then you go up the middle with Scheifele, Roslovic, or Little, whatever. You know, Little is your second, and then Roslovic maybe at some point in time he takes over there, and then Lowry is your fourth line
right.
center.
That's your ideal right there.
You're pretty set at that point.
And that's my whole point. And then you're dealing with a guy who, you know, at the same time, you're not getting killed with his contract, right? He's got two more years of his entry level deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, there you go. There's an op, gives you that room. That's all I'm saying, is that you're afforded an opportunity with a guy like Jack Roslovic, who, like I said, isn't going to put up a million points in the NHL necessarily, but he's responsible defensively. He's a very smart player. So to me, I think he solidifies that third line center position for you with cost certainty, which as a team that has a lot of money that needs to be spent is probably well spent on those other players, and allows you to have Jack Roslovic. And if you need to, if you need to, then you bring another center in.
Exactly. If the circumstances,
I think Paul Stastny's priced himself out of Winnipeg.
Well, that's a credit to him, certainly.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you look at the contract. I mean, I was in preparing here, I looked at what possible contracts he might ask for.
Yeah.
So Paul Stastny is going to be, or he's 32 years old, and he'll be 33 in December. And so I looked at a guy like Franz Nielsen. Franz Nielsen was signed his latest contract with the Detroit Red Wings when he was 32 years old.
Yep.
Coming off of a career year with the New York Islanders when he had 52 points, which is in and around where Paul Stastny is now in terms of his points in a season. In and around
53
that,
or whatever.
Yeah, this year was 53 in 82 games. So it's in and around that vicinity. Both of them centermen, both of them defensively responsible. You would say Stastny probably has more offensive upside than Franz Nielsen. But if you're Paul Stastny's agent, you're going to teams and you're saying, look, Nielsen got 6 years. He got $31.5 million, a little more than $5.25 million per season.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bare minimum we're going to take for Paul Stastny, given that Stastny is a player that's more offensively inclined and probably has a better pedigree than Franz Nielsen. I just don't see how the Jets can put another $5.5 million contract on their books going into next year with all the other players that need to be signed.
No, I think that's been illustrated very well in our segment. If you look, again, like I said, with Perreault, Little, all these guys signed for term and for that kind of money,
yeah.
I just don't see how, and again, we've talked about it. Patrick Laine, he likes Winnipeg, but he said,
pay him.
We're going to have to negotiate.
Yeah, he's not going to take $4 million a year.
No, I mean, and we had a question posed to us by one of our followers on Facebook in terms of whether guys would restructure their contracts. And I said, it's not the way they do it. And to be honest with you, why should they?
I also don't think they can't. It's not like the NFL,
right,
where you can restructure a contract as opposed to getting cut.
But I think he meant from the perspective of taking new deals, and not a guy who isn't existing, but a guy who...
Less money to
exactly.
Around.
And I was just like... the reality is that guys, why should they? I mean, a guy like Paul Stastny knows this is his opportunity to get paid. Yeah. Now, of course, at the same time, conversely, these guys want to win the Stanley Cup. So if it shaves, a couple $100,000 off to play on a team versus,
right,
one versus the other, one's going to give you a good chance to win the Stanley Cup. Fine, you're going to do that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about $2-3 million. People are like, oh, what does that matter when you're already making five? Well, it matters.
Guys.
It matters to these guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
if somebody's offering you $5.5 million and somebody's offering you $8
million,
no matter how much I want to win, that $8 million is still an extra $2.5 million.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, like I said, these guys know that they have a finite playing career, and that's their opportunity to make bank. And you can't be dismissive of it, because that's, what they've worked their whole lives for.
When we come back, we talk about the two teams with an opportunity to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup. That's the Vegas Golden Knights and Washington Capitals. We preview the Stanley Cup final up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
In by Kuznetsov, is tumbling to the ice with Chris Kunitz. Fed on to Kuznetsov to Ovechkin.
It proved to be the game-winning goal in Game 7. Alex Ovechkin scored a little more than a minute into the game. The Tampa Bay Lightning offense dried up at a very inopportune time, and the Washington Capitals advanced to the Stanley Cup Final. They'll play the Vegas Golden Knights. The Cup Final, I believe, begins in the middle of August at this point in time. It actually begins Monday night, of course, but they certainly have been taking their sweet time to get it started. Be sure to stay tuned for Stanley Cup Media Day tomorrow, which is apparently now a thing.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I guess it just means that they do interviews before the series starts on Monday.
Is that like a...
It's supposed to be like NFL
Media Day?
Like
the Super Bowl pre...
Yeah.
Oh.
But, you know.
I'm sure it'll be riveting.
Well, I'm going to stay at home. I know that. And just be, I'll be glued to my, I don't even know if it's broadcast anywhere. But the NHL, I have no idea why they decided to take 5 days off between the Game 7. The Golden Knights haven't won't have played for 9 days.
Yeah.
8 days.
That'll be a little rest. A
little rest, I would think. The Capitals get a, you know, the Golden Knights win in 5 games. And then they get 8 days off. So you're thinking, well, let's get our opponents starting real quick.
You know, like they did with the Jets.
Like they did with the Jets.
Yeah.
The Jets started, you know, 2 days after they dispatched the Nashville Predators in 7 games. And the Golden Knights, you know, won in 6. So they get a bit of a rest reward, you would say. But the Capitals now get 5 whole days off as well. So I don't know. I don't see what the advantage is. I mean, you would think you should reward a team for finishing, you know, their series quicker than their opponent, but what do I know? I'm only an interested observer.
Well, the other thing, if you think about it from an NHL's perspective, is why aren't you starting it on a Saturday night?
The reason they're not is they want to avoid Memorial Day long weekend.
No, I get it, but I'm just saying, like,
it's so stupid, though.
It just, you know, consider. I mean, the reality is, I don't know how many people are going to be overly interested.
That's just it. If you're interested and you want to watch it, you're going to watch it, you know, in the States because they don't care about Canada. But you want to watch it in the States, regardless of when the game is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a diehard Capital, diehard Golden Knights, just diehard hockey fan, you're going to watch the Stanley Cup final whenever it starts.
Right.
You don't have to wait for the... There's no casual fan tuning in on Monday night.
Yeah.
That wasn't tuning in.
Because the holiday weekend is over.
Right. Especially because they might go up, if I'm not mistaken, up against the Game 7 in the NBA as well. So, like, if Golden State beats Houston tonight,
yeah,
and sends that to Game 7, the Game 7's Monday night.
Oh, well, that should be good.
Yeah. You know, they're just... sharp as attack over there at NHL head office. Anyways, regardless of that, we're going to talk about the Stanley Cup final here. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Quick note on the previous segment, we were talking about the Jets and everything else. Bud and Headingley chimes in via text.
Mm-hmm.
He says the Jets should trade Kulikov and Mason to make cap space to sign Paul Stastny, sign Michael Hutchinson as the backup, or move Comrie up and use Moreau, Sherratt, and Nikku as your left side defenseman, I guess, alongside with Morrissey. And the Jets are so much better with Paul Stastny. Crazy to let him go. Also, the Jets need to take a run at getting John Tavares. So thank you to Bud and Headingley for chiming in via text. If you want to get in on text, 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply, or you can do it via Twitter, at Illegal Curve.
I suspect that there's a number of other teams that are going to lean in on the John Tavares sweepstakes, and the Jets will not be one of them.
I would suggest that it's going to be very difficult for the Jets to make that work. In any event, David Minuk, the Stanley Cup final gets underway Monday.
Yep.
It's the Golden Knights against the Washington Capitals. A lot of interesting storylines here, particularly it starts with George McPhee, general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, the former general manager of the Washington Capitals, doing battle against his good friend Brian McClellan, who's now the GM of the Capitals. I think this is going to be a very interesting Stanley Cup final. It's a non-traditional Stanley Cup final. You know, two teams, of course, that have never won the Stanley Cup before. But the way that Alex Ovechkin looks determined to certainly get his team this far, and to, I mean, this is probably his best chance, certainly the best chance of his career thus far to win the Stanley Cup. I think the dynamics of Ovechkin versus Marc-Andre Fleury, of Holtby versus Marc-Andre Fleury, Nate Schmidt, former Washington Capitals defenseman, now with the Golden Knights. A lot of storylines, a lot of interest to me in this Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not like these two teams have a storied rivalry
that
you can draw upon and say, well, there's this. So you look at these individual storylines and you think to yourself, yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. Guy like Barry Trotz finally making it this far in his coaching career, having an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, again, Gerard Gallant, after everything that went down in Florida with him, to have this chance with this team. I mean, yeah, Drew, you can touch on so many different factors to me that make it an interesting playoffs. I mean, even from a Manitoba perspective, you look at these two teams and, you know, they've got players, they've got coaches, they've got, you know, broadcasters, they've got everything with a Manitoba connection. So, I mean, I jokingly said it on Twitter that these guys are going to be one of these two teams will be bringing the Stanley Cup back to Winnipeg. So the Stanley Cup will be in Winnipeg at some point this summer because, of course, of all the connections through Manitoba. Now, of course, there's a lot more on Vegas than there are on Washington, but there still are some significant ones, including Barry Trotz and Madison Bowie. So I think it'll be phenomenal from that perspective. I mean, again, the time off is interesting. But I guess from the perspective of health, I mean, you don't know how much a guy can heal up in a few, you know, in a few days. But Nicholas Backstrom, who has actually was lights out for Washington against Tampa, clearly, even if you looked at if you watched the handshake line, was shaking with his other hand.
Yes,
wasn't shaking with his right hand, was shaking with his left,
which tells you that his right hand is pretty banged up.
But still, regardless, like I don't remember the number, but his completion of his passing was really really high in games 6 and 7. So he's been extremely effective. And you touched on Alexander Ovechkin and what this means for him. And clearly, there's a number of other players that you know are. You know, not as talked about because the eyes are all going to be on Ovechkin and this chance to win. But, you know, and I think it's about a legacy. I think, you know, regardless of whether – I'm not suggesting it's going to diminish what he's done, what he's been able to accomplish in the NHL. You can't take that away. But there's still that testament. There's still that statement that says, I'm a Stanley Cup champion.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to add that –
It takes an asterisk next away from his name.
Yeah, and again, I'm not maligning his scoring ability. Of course not. And again, winning the Stanley Cup isn't something like it's less so than we saw what we see in the NBA, where an individual player can put a team on his back and really carry them to the finals. It is a team game, so you can't put it all on Ovechkin. I just think it will go so much further in terms of cementing that legacy that you can just see. That's how much he wants it, and that's how much he desires to win.
You know, we asked the question when Mike Kelly joined us. I asked Mike about, you know, if Marc-Andre Fleury has any dip in his game whatsoever. I mean, I think I saw a stat from Rob Volman earlier on Twitter. Let's see if I can pull it up here. About
what, the goal saved above
the
average?
Goal saved above average.
No, and that is, if you're looking at advanced stats for goalies, that's the one that everybody who really analyzes goaltenders.
Yeah.
And I believe Rob Volman actually is the guy who created that stat. And basically, it's just goals saved above average. And Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, was like 17.
Yeah,
I think it was like plus 17.
The next person was like 4 or something.
Yeah,
it's incredible what Marc-Andre Fleury has
done. No, you can't diminish what. I mean, again, I agree with Mike's idea that you can't diminish what Vegas has been able to do their forward group, because they have been extremely opportunistic and effective when they've been given those opportunities to take advantage of them. But at the same time, you cannot diminish what Marc-Andre Fleury did. If he doesn't make that save on Mark Scheifele and the game goes to overtime,
mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it's a different series. Now, of course, you could say a number of point to a number of things and say, well, maybe it would be a different series. But I just think that, to me, and I said this after the third round, he's your Conn Smythe winner. Now, although, I mean, again, if Washington wins, maybe you give it to Ovechkin. But I think that I could see Marc-Andre Fleury winning it, win or lose.
It's going to be a remarkably interesting series. I mean, you know, the Golden Knights have been relying on Marc-Andre Fleury so significantly that any dip in his performance, even if it's just down to, you know, even just above league average as opposed to exceptionally above league average, might change the entire outlook of the series. It gets underway on Monday, of course. When we come back, Jesse Granger of the Las Vegas Sun joins us, talk more about the Stanley Cup Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Lots of good questions coming in via Twitter. We'll try and get to them this hour. You can send us messages via text. 1290.90 is how you reach us here in studio. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Las Vegas Sun, we're pleased to welcome to the program Jesse Granger. He, of course, covers the Golden Knights in their inaugural season, an inaugural season that sees them hosting the Stanley Cup Final, Game 1, this coming Monday night. Jesse, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Jesse. Obviously, we'll get to the series and we'll get to the breakdown between the Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals. Just give us a scene setter, though. What's it like in Vegas right now? They've been off since Wednesday, of course. Pardon me, since Sunday, last Sunday, when they defeated the Jets here in Winnipeg and won the series in 5 games. How are they staying loose? How is the team, you know, preparing for the game 1 on Monday night, a whole 8 days off? What's the scene like in Vegas with the team, and what's the scene like with the fans as well?
Well, Gerard Gallant has kept them on the same regimen that they are on while they're playing. He's having them do two hard practices, then giving them a day off, two hard practices, giving them a day off, trying to kind of simulate, at least for their bodies, what you go through when you're in the middle of a series. They've looked pretty sharp at practice the last few days. As far as the fans go, man, it's crazy down here. The practices are open to the public. They have bleachers in their, well, I wouldn't even say bleachers. They have full-on stands at their practice facility that seat about 800 people. And the last few practices have been so full that they had to make a statement yesterday saying that they are cutting it off at a certain amount once they reach capacity, and people are going to be turned away from practice because too many people are coming. It's becoming like a fire hazard. On the Strip, it's pretty crazy. There's just Golden Knights everywhere. You could drive past Caesar's Palace. The Roman soldier guys have hockey sticks in their hands. The statues have hockey sticks in their hands. The lion outside the MGM is getting the Golden Knights logo put on it. All the blackjack tables and poker tables on the Strip, the felt that you play on is now Golden Knights colored. It's crazy.
Jesse, going back to that series against the Jets, what did it mean to Ryan Reeves to be, you know, the local lad, get that game-winning goal, his first goal as a Golden Knight? Just what did it mean for him to get that the goal, the clinching goal?
It was it's pretty storybook. I mean, he's the Winnipeg guy. He grew up there. He played for the Junior Jets as a kid. Everybody knows his dad has been there. He said the best moment of the season for him was getting booed by the Winnipeg fans. He obviously, Reeves has got some good character. He's a guy that doesn't score many goals at all, so for him to score at all is special, let alone for him to score the Stanley Cup final clinching goal. He's worked really hard since coming over to the Golden Knights, and he's been a healthy scratch for a lot of the playoffs, and as he does have some deficiencies in his game, obviously, but as a guy, I really like him, and it was cool to see him get that.
Jesse Granger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun. Jesse, you know, obviously the ties between the Golden Knights organization and the Capitals organization are you know, deep and almost deeper than you'd expect. It starts with George McPhee. It starts with Brian McClell, and they were both colleagues, of course, with the Washington Capitals. What's that dynamic sort of been like? What's it like for George McPhee to go up against his former team and the team that he led for so many years as GM of the Capitals?
Yeah, when I talk to George, he wants absolutely nothing to do with talking about Washington right now. And I can't say I blame him. I wish he did want to talk about it for my sake, but he doesn't want anything to do with that. But I think it can't hurt the Golden Knights in this series. I talked to Gerard Gallant and I asked him, how much input does George McPhee have on strategy? How much does he tell you guys things? And he's like, yeah, we might ask him about a player here or there, a tendency or something. And I mean, if you think about it, there is no person on earth, I think, that has studied why the Capitals failed to get to this point more than George McPhee. I mean, every year that was his job. Why do we keep losing to the Penguins? Why do we keep losing to the Rangers? And he's got to have some sort of insights as to certain things players can't do. I don't know how much of a factor that's going to play on the ice, but it certainly can't hurt.
Jesse, what has Derek Englund meant to the franchise? I mean, we know he spoke for, you know, the Vegas Strong, and he just seems to have means so much more than just his play on the ice.
Yeah, you hit it on the nail on the head. He's been the leader of this team since the expansion draft. He's a guy that played minor league hockey here for the Las Vegas Wranglers about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and loved the city so much he decided to live here in the off season when he wasn't playing in Pittsburgh and Calgary. And he was the guy that helped all these players find where to live in Vegas, where to move to, kind of helped them get their grasp on the city. Obviously, that speech on October 10th, 9 days after the mass shooting on the Strip, was one of, if not the biggest moments in Golden Knights history. I've said before, if you want to build a statue of Derek Englund's speech is probably the most appropriate one. He is up for the Mark Messier Leadership Award. He's one of the three finalists. He's been everything they've needed. He doesn't wear the captaincy, but he's been the unnamed captain for this team.
Jesse Granger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun. Jesse, all the attention has been on Marc-Andre Fleury, given how exceptional he's been in these playoffs. Yet, Braden Holtby has gone 159 minutes and 47 seconds without giving up a goal. We know how dominant the Capitals were against the Lightning in Game 6 and 7 of their Eastern Conference Final. You know, obviously that's a key matchup, Holtby versus Fleury. Do you think that maybe Holtby is taking, you know, all the focus is on Fleury? Do you think maybe Holtby's enjoying that, flying a little bit under the radar and saying, hey, I'm a pretty good goaltender myself over here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this Capitals team is has enjoyed being under the radar all season. I mean, they finally broke through, and it's the season no one expected anything of them. Every year, they had all those points, President's Trophy, and they did the same thing. This year, they finally had no pressure. Nobody expected anything of them. Everyone said this is their worst team they've had in a while, and they finally make it to the final. For Holtby, the biggest difference between he and Fleury is, especially like Hellebuck last series, he struggled handling the puck behind the net. Holtby is so good at handling the puck. He's almost like a third defender back there. It's amazing how good he is handling the puck. And that takes away, the Golden Knights are not going to be able to just throw the puck up the boards back behind the net, because if he gets it on his stick, I mean, he's so good at it. He rarely makes a bad decision. He starts the breakout for the Capitals. It takes away options when you're trying to enter the blue line for the Golden Knights. It's going to be exciting. We saw a great goaltender duel in the first round. Jonathan Quick played better than any goalie that's ever been swept in NHL history. But Fleury was able to edge him out in that. So it should be fun. I think we're going to see a really good goalie duel in the final.
You know, Jesse, taking you back again to last Sunday, we saw the Clarence S. Campbell Bowl be presented. Was there any question that Derek Engeling was going to touch it? And thankfully, both teams did it, so we don't have to worry about whether you should or shouldn't touch those trophies.
Yeah, they said that the ultimate decision came down to Flower. Derek Engeling asked him right after the game was won, they're on the ice, and Derek Engeling told me he went up to Fleury and asked him if he should touch it, and Fleury said yeah, because he's 3-0 on the Penguins when they do touch it, and 0-1 when they don't. So yeah, there was no question he was gonna grab the trophy, and this team has said they don't really care about the traditional way of doing things pretty much all year. That's what they've done, so might as well continue it.
Jesse Granger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Golden Knights Washington Capitals Stanley Cup Final. Jesse, the Jets in the conference final had some success on the power play against the Golden Knights. The Capitals even have a more dynamic power play. They've been absolutely exquisite with the man advantage in these playoffs. Is that an area of focus for Gerard Gallant to try and clean up the Golden Knights penalty kill and try and minimize the damage that the Capitals can do with the man advantage?
For sure. You said it. They are deadly on that power play. And it's funny because it's a similar power play system to what Winnipeg runs. The Winnipeg runs, they've got Laine sitting at the top of that circle just waiting for the puck, and he wants to smash it in. And Ovechkin, the same thing, except for just better at it. And I think the only way to consistently stop their power play is to not give them power plays. If you get in the box against this team, you're going to be in trouble. And the Golden Knights were one of the best teams in the NHL during the regular season at not taking penalties. I think they're the second least penalized team. But in the playoffs, that's gone away. They've committed way too many penalties in the playoffs. So, yeah, the Capitals are an emotional, scrappy bunch that are probably going to try to get under their skin. You cannot let them get under your skin. You can't let them get you down a man, because if you do, Ovechkin's going to hurt you.
You know, Jesse, I know that there's been talk already about the city planning for a Stanley Cup parade. Now, I know the team isn't going to talk about that at all, but, you know, where do you think that parade route would go? Would they take would they shut down the strip and actually take the parade up and down the Las Vegas Strip?
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely where it's happening. The cool thing about the strip is most cities that do a Stanley Cup parade, they do it down whatever the main road is in that city, but there's really nowhere on that road that's designed for people to stand and look on. Whereas the strip, there are like a million overpasses, because nobody crosses the strip in a crosswalk. There are nobody walks across Las Vegas Boulevard. They're all bridges over it, little miniature pedestrian bridges. So that road is really built for events like that. You see, when in New Year's Eve, when we have the party out here, they shut it down. They do a marathon around Christmas where they shut the strip down. So, yeah, if there's a city that's built to host a parade, Vegas is definitely built for it.
Jesse, last question for you, and we always appreciate you joining us here on the program. Is there one player on the Golden Knights who's maybe not getting the attention that you think would be the X factor in this Stanley Cup final? Guy like David Perron, he's still looking for his first goal in the postseason. You know, is there one player in particular that you think is an X factor for the Golden Knights to be successful in this Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, I'll go way off the radar, even further than David Perron, with Pierre-Édouard Bellemare.
Wow.
You talked about how important it's going to be to kill these penalties. He is Vegas' best penalty killer. Early in the series, he was not killing penalties well against Winnipeg. He got better and better as the series went on. He is going to be key. You have to move Ovechkin off of his spot. Everybody that's watched hockey knows exactly where Ovechkin wants to be on the ice, especially on that power play. Bellemare has to bother him, get him off that spot, and when he does get on that spot and fire that shot, Bellemare needs to lay down and take one for the team, and he's done it all year. I think he continues to do it. He's one of the most underrated players on this team. He gets hardly any credit. He's also the face-off guy. He takes the first face-off of every penalty kill, which obviously is huge, trying to get that first clear. So I think if Bellemare has a good series, the Golden Knights can basically not lose.
Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun. Jesse, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Stanley Cup Final.
For sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Jesse. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Evander Kane's new contract with the San Jose Sharks. The Natural getting paid. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I don't think there's any problem with Evander Kane. Keep a couple things in mind. Number one, he's a young player and he's been productive. Number two, you know, Doug Wilson got a real good look at Evander Kane, not just the player, but how he would fit in with his team. Number three, Joe Thornton's not going to be around forever. You know, he's going to hit 40 next year. You have Joe Pavelski, who's going to be 34 when he comes off of his contract. So, you know, there's no cap stress on the San Jose Sharks by signing Evander Kane to this contract. It's a real good contract. I think it's solid. No problems whatsoever.
TSN's Craig Button discussing the Evander Kane contract. He signs a 7-year, $49 million contract with the Sharks. The Sharks, of course, acquired him just prior to the trade deadline. He had a good little run there in San Jose after getting signed to the contract. You know, quite successful, quite reasonable with his performance until they were defeated by the Golden Knights. In 17 regular season games, Evander Kane had 9 goals, 5 assists for 14 points, which extrapolated over a full season would certainly be his best offensive output in the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you on this Saturday morning. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight, his last night in town, Mick Kaplan at Rumors, been playing to sold-out shows all week long. Get your tickets now before they're gone. rumorscomedyclub.com. And remember, if you fancy yourself a comedian, if you, you know, people tell you all the time how funny you are, sign up for Winnipeg's Funniest Person with a day job. You have an opportunity to get on stage, get some experience as a comedian, you know, cash prizes at the end of the contest if you are deemed the winner. It's Winnipeg's Funniest Person with a Day Job, exclusively at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For more information, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Let me ask you this. Do you need to have a day job to actually be the Winnipeg's Funniest Person?
I don't think to qualify
for that contest.
I think they're pretty liberal with the definition of the word day job.
Like, Ezzy goes to work, maybe we could say, but he's pretty funny, so
yeah,
maybe, you know.
We talked about Ezzy potentially.
They pay him in crackers, though, that's the only thing. So are they going to want to look at his T4 to ensure that he actually makes money?
Like his current job,
yes,
pays him in crackers, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would count. They'd have to discuss with the judges or the official rules and regulations. I'm not sure what it says about payment in crackers.
Okay.
But I know that Rumors is paying out cold hard cash
really?
To whoever wins it. And that cold hard cash for Ezzy could conceivably be translated into crackers.
Okay, you know, there you go.
With cash,
you so can it's all full crackers. Circle. It's full circle.
Full circle there with okay. him, of course. Anyways, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Clearly, neither one of us is going to be applying for that position.
No, we're neither of us are funny. Ezzy's the comedy behind this. We're the brains and the good looks, and I'll leave it up to somebody else to decide which one of us is brains and which one of us is good looks.
Double trouble over here. Go on.
Anyways, Evander Kane, 7 years, $49 million goes to him to be a member of the Sharks for the next 7 years. You know, Craig Button didn't have any problem with it,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of other people thought it was a significant contract, maybe too much of a contract. Matt Larkin of the Hockey News, you know, believes that Evander Kane has impossible expectations put on him with the $7 million cap hit. That will rank him fifth among left wingers in terms of salary cap hit on a per-season basis, when in fact Kane is 39th in goal scoring among left wingers over the last five seasons. So Matt Larkin's point is you're paying a guy for potential performance as opposed to for anything that he's actually accomplished in the course of his career. Your thoughts on the contract, Dave Minuk? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Or was this what Evander Kane was going to get in the open market, regardless of if it was from San Jose or any other team?
Well, I think from a San Jose perspective, they needed some speed, and they needed a big, you know, kind of guy who could score some goals for them. And the reality is, that's what they saw in Evander Kane since he's come over with the trade. And one thing about Evander Kane that people have to remember is the guy is like tough as nails. I mean, he played through some serious injuries with the Jets. Mm-hmm. He did the same, it sounds like, with San Jose. So, I mean, the guy gives for his team. Now, you know, personal issues aside that people seem to have with him, you know, there's going to be expectations. I mean, look, you sign a 7-year, $7 million deal. You can't just be like, okay, well, I can go back to not performing to the degree of my contract.
Sure.
I mean, if you're going to make the money, if you're going to demand that kind of money, well, Matt Larkin, is it wrong? There's going to be high expectations. You're the fifth highest paid left winger in the NHL right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to play like that. You have to be, you know, the expectations are going to be that you're going to perform. It's the reason why the Sharks are paying him the money. It's the reason why he signed the contract. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to like already poo-poo a deal that just got signed, because it's going to be based on his performance. Now, I think he can perform up to that level? You know, he's got talent, and he's shown that he likes the system in San Jose. And I expected him to be on the West Coast. It's close to home for him in Vancouver, mm-hmm. or where he grew up, I should say, not necessarily where he lives. But the fact is that it gives him an opportunity to be close to family and you know, give him that lifestyle that he wants. Clearly, I mean, there's been numerous articles written about what he likes about, or how he likes the atmosphere in San Jose, how they allow him to be him.
Yeah.
So I think it's putting Evander Kane into a situation that will allow him to succeed. And if he doesn't succeed, really it's on Evander Kane, not on any other parameters.
Yeah. You know, I thought the best quote I read from that Matt Larkin article was, you know, he summarizes the contract as follows. The Sharks are telling Kane with this contract to, quote, be better than the best you've ever been. Do it for a long time and don't get hurt. So, I mean, I thought that was sort of summarized it very nice in encapsulating the entire deal. How much of that injury concern do you think is realistic? He's missed 97 games over the past five seasons since he's really been a member of the Jets and a member of the Buffalo Sabres. The most he's played over the last, since, you know, 2012, 2013, or, you know, is 70 games. That was back in 2016-17 when he put up 43 points for the Sabres. I mean, we know, you know, the flip side to that is this is a guy who can score. You know, he had 28 goals in that 16-17 year. He had 29 goals last year in total between Buffalo and San Jose. The hardest thing to do in the NHL is to score goals, and he can do it. I mean, you're not getting a lot in terms of assists from him, but scoring goals on a team in San Jose that had trouble scoring goals is a pretty valuable asset to acquire.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that's part and parcel of the type of player you're getting is that he's not going to be able to play all of your games. But I mean, look, he played a significant number this season. And the fact is that's, you have to go on that basis that he's a guy who's going to, you know, score 30 goals for you next year. And the reality is for San Jose, again, it goes back to my earlier point. It's something they need. They needed goal scoring. So I really don't know how you were going to do it other than, you know, try and compete with a number of other teams trying to lure John Tavares out there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I just think it's a function of it's an asset that San Jose needed. Now, did they overpay? Maybe. Sure. Of course, maybe they we'll see, but we don't know that yet. We don't know because he has to, you know, it's like anything, you're future casting. So,
to your point, at first I thought I saw the contract, I saw the term, I saw the dollars. I'm like, it's a lot. I mean, maybe it's the term you don't like as opposed to the dollars. Maybe you're, but, you know, truthfully, if he hit July 1st, somebody was going to give him that contract because he's a guy who can score between 25 and 30 goals and can do it almost effortlessly. You can almost pencil him in for between 25 and 30 goals, and that's going to get you paid in the NHL by any team whatsoever. And you mentioned in passing there, Dave, in your previous answer or when you're answering the previous question about John Tavares, and I think he's the X factor and the dark horse in all this because you've heard that the San Jose Sharks would be very interested in getting John Tavares, as I'm sure every team in the NHL would be. But you've heard, if all of a sudden you compare John Tavares with Evander Kane going forward for the next 7 years, and that's your centerman and that's your left winger, well, then I think the contract becomes a lot more palatable because he's playing with such a dynamic player in John Tavares. It's a big if, of course, because it's going to be difficult for the Sharks and will take a little bit of magic to get him under the salary cap. And John Tavares can really pick his destination, and wherever he decides that he wants to go upon free agency, if he decides to want to leave Long Island, it'll be his decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point. John Tavares can write his ticket.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're getting towards, Drew. And I think that's there's a million teams right now, not literally, that are going to want to sign him and give him big money and give him big term because of how dynamic a player he is. San Jose, for sure, is one of those teams that is trying to figure out, it's the point of what our earlier, who was it? It was Bud and Headingley.
Yeah. Yes.
Like every team covets a player who's that dominant and is that effective for their team. Of course, everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So, every fan base, every team out there is looking at John Tavares saying, how do we get this guy in? Now, of course, we know most teams can't fit a guy who's going to earn that kind of salary under their current structure, because generally if you have a big enough cap hit already, it's because you're competing and you're playing your players.
Yeah.
So a team like San Jose, sure, they're going to be fighting for a guy like a team like Detroit, who's trying to get back into prominence. Maybe, obviously there's the Toronto talk, which will always be the Toronto talk,
Montreal.
Montreal.
Every team in the NHL wants to fit John Tavares into their system.
So no, but would he look good with Evander Kane? For sure. For sure. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers to actually see whether San Jose could do it under their current structure, but
it would take some manipulation.
Right.
A good friend of the program was talking about a Paul Gackle of the San Jose Mercury News was speculating at how they could potentially make it done, and it would involve buying out a contract here, a contract there. But that being said, if John Tavares or John Tavares' representatives come to your team and say, John is significantly interested in coming here.
Mm-hmm.
You figure out, you make it work in the now, because you can always go up to 10% over the salary cap, until the season starts.
Mm-hmm.
So if the salary cap is $80 million, if that's whatever, and we don't know yet what the number is, but people are speculating.
You're saying
between,
make a contract and then figure it out after the fact.
That's right. If you have 80, it's between 78 and 82 million, so let's split the difference and say it's going to be an $80 million salary cap. If it means that you have 86 million on your books as of July 2nd, and including John Tavares, well, you figure out how to get rid of the other money afterwards with buyouts or with trades or whatever it might be. I don't think you pass up an opportunity to put John Tavares on your team,
especially
if you're a team like San Jose with a guy like Joe Thornton up the middle, who's certainly not getting any younger. And boy, wouldn't you go up the middle with a guy like Couture and with Tavares? Doesn't that look pretty good?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, and if you're a team like San Jose who's planning on trying to, probably win now, yeah, that's probably definitely something they're looking at.
It'll be interesting to see. In any event, we know that Evander Kane will play in San Jose for the next 7 years. When we come back, we head out to Regina. Rob Vanstone is with the Regina Leader Post. We're going to talk about the Memorial Cup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And our website that has the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head 6 hours west down the Trans-Canada Highway to bring in Rob Vanstone of the Regina Leader Post. The 100th Memorial Cup is in Regina. It's been there all week. Rob joins us now to talk about the championship of Canadian junior hockey. Rob, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Rob. Obviously, last night it was a good night, at least for the hometown organizers and the hometown fans, as the Regina Pats knocked off the Hamilton Bulldogs to move into the Memorial Cup final against Acadie Bathurst. Just how, sort of give us a scene setter of what it was like last night in Regina for that semifinal matchup between the Pats and the Bulldogs.
It really was something. It's starting to feel like it did in 2013 when the Grey Cup was in Regina and the Rough Riders advanced to the Grey Cup and then ultimately won it. I'm not trying to prejudge the outcome, but there's that kind of buzz around hockey that I don't think I've seen before, and I've only lived here for 54 years. So it really was an amazing scene. I took video of it just because there's so much to process when you haven't seen anything like that in person before, and put it on Twitter because I just saw this is kind of Regina sporting history in the making, and just when you think you've seen everything, I guess you haven't.
You know, Rob, considering the heartbreak this team experienced last year, just how significant is it that they've made it to this point again this year?
Yeah, that's what really resonated with me last night and what I wrote about. There's only six players who were full-timers with the Pats last year that are still with the team, but they're core players, obviously, and for the most part. And it just gnawed at them. They didn't make a big deal out of it during the season, but it was something that really kind of stuck in their craw. Last season, they won 52 games, which is the most in franchise history, and they won the Eastern Conference regular season title, the playoff title. And by the time they got to the league final against the Seattle Thunderbirds, they were pretty much spent. They'd lost three players were playing hurt for the most part. Adam Brooks from Winnipeg, now in the Toronto Maple Leafs chain, was twice injured during the playoffs, and he was their captain. And they just didn't have a lot left when they ran into a Seattle team that was really physical. And that didn't help as far as the physical toll that it exacted either. So I think they felt last year that they were the best team and they should have been at the Memorial Cup. And for a group of them, I think this is a chance to finish a job that began more than a year ago.
Rob Vanstone, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're discussing the 100th Memorial Cup. The championship will be decided tomorrow afternoon as the Regina Pats meet the Acadie Bathurst Titan. And Rob, you mentioned the Pats last year ran out of gas after getting all the way to the Western Hockey League Finals. This year, Swift Current ran out of gas, going 0-2-1 in the round robin. Were there parallels from your perspective between the Pats last year and the Broncos this year?
I really thought there were. As I listened to Manny Viveros, the Swift Current head coach, on Wednesday after the round robin finale that also turned out to be the finale for the Swift Current Broncos, I thought to myself, I've heard this before. I've seen this before. And by the end of the Memorial Cup, at least for the Broncos, they were really in rough shape physically. Tyler Steenberg, who scored the gold medal winning goal for Canada at the World Juniors, he was concussed earlier in the Memorial Cup. Glenn Gaudin, the Broncos captain and the WHL leading scorer this year, he was playing with a separated shoulder. Archon Manulin, one of their key defensemen, twice injured his shoulder during the playoffs and was still playing. And I thought, well, it reminds me a lot of the Regina Pats a year ago. It's just such a physical toll the teams have to endure just to get here. And sometimes when you do get to the Memorial Cup, there isn't a whole lot left. And maybe that happened to the Seattle Thunderbirds last year, too, because they got to the Memorial Cup and went 0-3 and were simply awful.
Rob, is there a player for the Pats who's stood out to you, like one maybe that you weren't anticipating having such an impact on the series?
Yeah, the Pats goalie, Max Paddock, he's only 17 years old. He's the nephew of John Paddock, the Pat's head coach and formerly, of course, of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
The should have been the Stanley Cup champion Winnipeg Jets. That's still bugging me. And, like, a lot. And coming into the tournament, you really don't know. Max Paddock had injured a groin right before the playoffs and didn't even play in the first-round series against Swift Current, which went seven games. And so here's a young man who's making his first postseason start at this level ever, and it's game one of the Memorial Cup. So you just don't know. The Pats made so many moves and emphatic moves during the season. And midway through the year, they pretty much turned over half their roster via trades. And one area that I think people felt that was still a question mark was goaltending. And it's not an enviable situation when going into a Memorial Cup, there's still questions about whether you have the goaltending. I think those questions have been largely answered last night. I think the Hamilton Bulldogs felt that they ran into a hot goalie. And that was the difference. He made 44 saves.
Rob Vanstone, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Memorial Cup taking place in Regina. The Pats are into the Memorial Cup final. Rob, Sam Steele, former first-round pick of the Anaheim Ducks, you know, he leads the entire Memorial Cup in terms of points. He's got 13 points in four games. Has he been as dominant on the ice as the score sheets would indicate?
Yeah. To me, that's the Memorial Cup MVP, unless something happens in the final. That's really surprising. He has played, I mean, he was the Russian Hockey League Player of the Year last year. And it's, when you've done that, it's tough. It's quite the tall order to think that you're going to elevate your game by a number of degrees. But I think he's done that. He's just been an absolutely amazing player. On the line with Cameron Hebig and Nick Henry, the latter being from Portage La Prairie. Mm-hmm. And those three have just been so amazing together. That's one of the best lines I've ever seen play for the Regina Pats, and for them to play that well at this stage is simply something. Sam Steele is just dominant every shift. Last night he played opposite Robert Thomas of the Hamilton Bulldogs, who was a St. Louis first rounder last year, and who was a teammate of Sam Steele's on the World Junior team. And Robert Thomas is an amazing player, and Sam Steele turned out to be, you know, a difference maker again last night, even with Robert Thomas pulling him all over the place.
You know, Rob, I saw your tweet saying that as a Wheat King, John Paddock played against the last Pats team to reach a Memorial Cup final. Just how impactful has John Paddock been on this series and on this team?
Oh, it's amazing. I don't think we could go on for 2 hours, and I don't think I could satisfactorily enumerate all the things that John Paddock has done for this team. It's been really something to watch and something to marvel at. He came in here in right before training camp in August of 2014. He was hired like a week or two before they started, and not a good situation with the timing. And right away, he made a difference with this team. Jets fans will remember he's not one who's going to he's not the kind of person that really attracts a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty low-key, even-keeled guy, and he is the self-promoter. So sometimes it's easy to take John Paddock for granted because he's just such a level-headed person. And the impact he has had on this team and on this series, just the absolutely perfect guy to coach a team, not only on the stage, but after this team loses in the first round of the playoffs, it is idle for 45 days. There's all sorts of questions, and you're dealing with this with a situation that nobody wants as the host team of Memorial Cup. And John Paddock just stayed calm like he always does and negotiated his way through it and the team's way through it. And they couldn't have a better person in charge right now.
Rob Vanstone, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rob, these two teams, of course, met in the round robin, that being the Regina Pats and Acadie Bathurst. They were 8-6 victors. Acadie Bathurst was last Sunday in clearly a high-scoring round robin game. Do you anticipate the same kind of offensive explosion, or do you think both teams will be focused on limiting the opportunities for their opponent, and how do you see tomorrow night's game playing out?
I don't think it'll be as crazy as that one. but I'm not sure. I've seen many games as crazy as that one. The Pats were down 7-2 early in the third period, and they scored four consecutive goals and before Acadie Bathurst scored an empty netter. And I don't think that it's going to end up that way. Acadie Bathurst has a really good defensive core, and the Pats goalie, Max Paddock, who had an awful night against Acadie Bathurst, showed last night that he's far better than that. So I can see a game with a lot of flow and a lot of speed. Both teams skate really well, and Regina's going to have so much buzz to their game because of the home crowd. I think it's going to be a really entertaining game, and we'll probably see half as many goals as we did last Sunday.
Rob, just an aesthetics point of view question. How slick are those Regina jerseys?
Those are really nice. I'm so used to the being an old timer. I'm used to the old classic look, and so it takes a lot for a new jersey to sway me because I just like things the way they were in 1975 for the most part. Except we only had two TV stations in Regina back then, so that wasn't very good. And but those really look sharp, and they've grown on me pretty quickly. And with all the donuts in the press room, I've grown on the tournament pretty quickly, too. Sorry.
Rob, last question for you. You know, the organizers and the ownership of the Regina Pats, it seems like they're going to take a fairly significant financial loss on the tournament. And they were going to take that loss regardless of if every game had been sold out. You wrote about it in the Leader Post that they deserve credit for just wanting the tournament there in Regina. Why were they so, desperate, for lack of a better word, to host the 100th Memorial Cup? And why did the financial loss almost not matter to them?
Well, they have more money than I do. I don't think that they're going to worry. I think each of the Pats five owners probably could have bought the team on their own and not have had to worry about whether it's really that profitable. So if that helps, I'm somewhat envious. But with it being the 100th Memorial Cup, with the Memorial Cup's ties to the military and the Pats' close ties to the military, I think that was a factor, and it was certainly a factor in their favor. And when they came in, they really wanted to make an impact and show that they were going to treat this franchise like a jewel. And the first season that they were the owners, they didn't have a score clock over center ice at the Brandt Center. It was like it was just kind of off behind one of the nets, and it was just ridiculous. The fans complained all the time, and the owners came in and said, we're going to fix this. They spent seven figures, and by mid-season, they had a new score clock that a lot of National Hockey League teams couldn't even conceive of. And that's the kind of resources they have, and that's the kind of ambition they have for this franchise. So when this came along, I think they just decided, regardless of the cost and regardless of what it takes, and they're going to get this tournament. And they went into the presentation, and it was shock and awe, and it had to be because the Oshawa Generals were a long-standing major junior franchise and rich in tradition themselves, and they were one of the finalists. And the Hamilton Bulldogs were also up for this, and they've shown that they certainly iced a team that was worthy of being in the Memorial Cup. So it wasn't an easy battle, and I think if it was close, they would have been pretty upset with themselves. They didn't throw everything at it, so they pretty much did. There was just no way to deny Regina the tournament after everything that was a component of a bid that was overwhelming.
Rob Vanstone covers the Regina Pats for the Regina Leader Post. Rob, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy tomorrow night's Memorial Cup final.
Thanks for your time, and go Jets. 2019 Stanley Cup champions.
There you go. I'd say go Riders, but I'd be booed out of town.
Go Weston Dressler.
There you go. We can agree on that front. Thanks, Rob. Take care. When we come back, one final segment, the New York Rangers have a new head coach. We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll talk a bit about the Jets as well. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Up next, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
That being said, I thought I could stay at BU forever.
But I've been fortunate enough to have a couple of teams reach out to me over the last few years. And when this call came, it was just different than all the others. And, you know, it's the pinnacle of our profession, coaching the New York Rangers. Like I said in the press conference, the relationship I have with Jeff and Chris and the direction the organization's going, it just the more time passed and the more we talked, it really just seemed like the right move for him.
That's New York Rangers head coach David Quinn. He joins the Rangers from Boston University, where he had been their head coach. This is his first NHL head coaching job for David Quinn. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Dave Minuk, the Rangers have that new head coach. It's weird that they don't have Alain Vigneault as their head coach. He's been there for so long and been, you know, the head coach in the Rangers for five successful seasons for the most part. Rangers obviously in a rebuilding format, as they're sort of a bit of a changing of the guard in New York, made a lot of moves right around the trade deadline, getting rid of some of their older veterans. Definitely going to be a youth movement in New York. Is David Quinn the right guy for the job from your perspective? You like him? No NHL head coaching experience. You know, I believe he spent 1 year as an assistant coach in the NHL. Well-regarded, though. It's not like his name came out of left field altogether. He was well-considered by a lot of people for other jobs in the NHL. This is the job he finally decides to take.
Yeah, and he penned a letter to the Rangers fans yesterday or the day before, just talking about the type of team he envisions being the head coach of. So, you know what? I think it's an opportunity. I think college coaches are getting more and more opportunities. Folks are, you know, not necessarily having to go with the traditional route of hiring a guy who's, you know, had 1,000 NHL games. Mm-hmm. You're looking to get new minds in the game. So I'm all for it. I like the idea of non-traditional means of adding to the bloodlines of the NHL head coaching staff, because sometimes it is a little insular and they only go
retread.
Well, or just on a very linear fashion, right? Yeah. As opposed to this, which is, again, a little bit of a different hire. But so we'll see. I mean, again, he's got, you know, Cole Nord talked about it earlier in the first segment, or I think second segment, or whatever we had him on.
Second hour. First segment of the second hour.
Right. Yeah. Just talking about how tough a market it is in New York. And the reality is they don't want to be in a rebuild. Mm-hmm. They want to be in a winner. And while they have the 94 championship to look back on, it's a long time.
24 years ago now.
Right, exactly. So the fact is that, you know, the Rangers aren't really that relevant. And he really isn't going to have the reality is they pride him out of a college atmosphere, so meaning that, or environment, I should say, so they're not exactly putting him there and saying, well, you have a short leash.
Sure.
Clearly, they're going to give him some time. But at the same time, I believe there's going to be high expectations. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Ilya Kovalchuk is rumored to potentially be going to the Rangers.
Yeah, Islanders were mentioned earlier this week as well.
Yeah.
I just don't see how Ilya Kovalchuk fits in with the Rangers right now. This isn't like it's clearly not a Stanley Cup contender. They're a young team going through a bit of a youth movement. So I don't see where Kovalchuk would necessarily fit in as a logical piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying his name has been mentioned within the context of New York. Again, like I said, I think that they're going to try and build within a certain framework that he sees the team within their parameters that he sees in terms of talent that they have currently on the roster. And then, you know, whether that it's through free agency or whether it's through trades that the team is willing to, you know, trade some assets to try and acquire pieces. I don't know what the game plan is for the New York Rangers. I don't follow them enough to be able to say this is their plan of action. This is the course that they're going to be following. But again, from his time in Boston, it seems like he's a very capable head coach.
I like the hire for a couple of the reasons you mentioned. One, to get some fresh blood, and I think a lot of teams oftentimes maybe are hesitant to bring in an outsider's point of view. They just want, not yes men necessarily, but they know they want guys who have already, you know, been seasoned in the NHL. You know, you have a young team in New York, not a ton of what I'll describe as expectations around you as you are going through that rebuild. I like the idea of a young head coach, which David Quinn certainly is, you know, getting an opportunity in the NHL. I mean, 51 is I mean, not a baby, of course, but relatively young in terms of NHL experience. I like the idea of him coming in and being able to relate to younger players who aren't that far removed, be it from junior hockey or college hockey or whatever it might be. So I think there's just I just think it's one of those moves that makes sense. Now, oftentimes these young guys or young head coaches may be put into a situation you can't expect him all of a sudden to succeed, you know, exponentially. with the Rangers because they're not at that point in time. So you got to give him the 1 year, 2 year, 3 years to really make his mark on the team and develop the young players so that this is the next wave of successful New York Rangers teams that the, obviously management like Jeff Gorton and management like Chris Drury are hoping to achieve with David Quinn leading the charge for them.
Yep, and I mean, look, this is a Rangers team that finished with 77 points last year, so they're gonna they've 37 less goals scored than they allowed, so they've definitely got some deficiencies that he's gonna have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And what, in his letter, he talked about defense. And he talked about the team's commitment to defense. So you can clearly see that he's got a vision for what this team has in the cupboard and what they're gonna have to do to be successful in the NHL with what they've got as they build towards it is what it is he envisions for this team.
Well, and you look at this team, they got 3 first round picks this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 2 first round picks next year. Pardon me, they have 3 first round picks this year, 2 second round picks this year, and 2 third round picks this year.
Yeah, and that can go huge if you're you know, that can absolutely. I mean, we've seen within the Jets organization what that does. Now, again, that doesn't necessarily bring you immediate success.
Of course not.
But down the road, but the whole point is that you really can't in today's NHL build with that 1 year unless you're the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
But like, obviously, this is the exception to the rule. You can't really build with that very short vision. You have to build with that long-term vision.
Oh, it should be at least 3 first-round picks. You hope you get 3 reasonable assets to add to your cupboard of other young players who they've... I mean, I like what the Rangers did at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. and I think these picks will certainly help build upon that. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Rob Vanstone of the Regina Leader Post, Jesse Granger of the Las Vegas Sun, Mike Kelly of TSN and NHL Network, Colton Orr of the Pride of Garden City, and Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's also available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group, Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, I'm Drew Mindell. Until next Saturday at 9 a.m., we thank you for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.